All right, thank you for that, Christopher Cross. Speaking of Christophers, our buddy Christopher Kane is joining us once again. He is in studio in San Francisco. Rick Tittle with you from my house in the East Bay, as is Karen Lyle, my co-host for the SalesportTalk.com segments on Tuesday. She is in her house as well. And first of all, Karen, were you upset to see that Stanford dropped a lot of their sailing teams?
Well, of course, anybody who drops a sailing team is going to have my notice.
All right. Let's get to the talk. Let's get to the talk about America's Cup, because this is something that our friend Christopher knows very well. And Christopher, let's make sure we know this is not coming up this weekend. This is all part of the buildup. We have some time before we actually get out on the waves for this, right? Christopher's there?
You know, I can see him talking, but I can't hear him, so.
Okay, well, let's
we'll
go to you then,
we'll give
Karen.
A moment. We'll give a moment.
Ah,
now,
there we go.
Rick, I'm going to let
wait,
you
wait, there he is. There he is. Christopher, tell us exactly when the America's Cup is taking place, because this is kind of like a 12-hour Super Bowl pregame show. We're getting you ready,
yeah,
aren't we?
It's the world's largest preseason, basically. Yeah, we don't get rolling until March for the real show, but you know, what's interesting, unlike other sports where you get to try out your new vehicles, your new Formula One during and before races, at least Ferrari wishes they'd done it before races, you know, there's a lot of work that takes getting these boats tuned up. So we've got the first American boat in the water. We got more boats showing up in September, but the main event isn't until March. But there's going to be an unbelievable amount of testing and data that will be compiled, as much as people talk about how data drives Formula One. You'd be amazed at the amount of data that these boats throw off every time they hit the water.
You know, Christopher, I was just looking at the video that you posted from the San Francisco America's Cup race on the photo album that we put up for the show, which people can reach, by the way, by going to SalesportTalk.com. And it was about the 17th and 18th races. And just for a moment, when I was just looking at that video, it brought back the rush of that thrill, which was actually the race that first got me interested in becoming a spectator in Salesport. And I have a question for you. Why did you choose that race to talk about for a prelude to what's to come?
Yeah, so that was, as everyone knows, in San Francisco during AC34, which, again, you can go to SalesportTalk.com. That's two T's, SalesportTalk.com, and click on the link to today's podcast, and you will see a link to a video that the America's Cup has up on their YouTube channel. And that race, I thought, was really interesting because, obviously, we all remember that the Kiwis got off to a huge lead, and then the Americans slowly started reeling them in, and you could see Dean Barker, who was the skipper of the New Zealand boat. You know, sometimes in sports, you can just see when another player or another team starts to set up camp in their head. And the reason I picked that one is that was the race that I've always said that's the race where Jimmy Spithill broke Dean Barker. And is, as many people we've talked about in the past, one of the biggest moments for a sailing race, especially the America's Cup when there's just two boats, is the start. Yeah, if you can get an advantage at the start, it gives you leverage pretty much across the entire race. And the Kiwis got themselves in trouble not once but twice during that pre-start. And basically the pressure from all those races, from being at the final race, you just have to win one more race and you've brought the America's Cup back to New Zealand, and they just couldn't get that last race. And that race, if you go there, it's day 12, and there's two races. But if you go look at the pre-start of the first race, you will see two incredible mistakes back-to-back by the Kiwis. And it's always been the moment to me where Jimmy Spithill sort of officially stopped paying rent and just lived in Dean Barker's head. And for a lot of us after that race, it was just a matter of the last two races playing out.
36 America's Cup will be March 6th to the 21st off the coast of Auckland, New Zealand. And Christopher, help us, let people like me, like some of the neophytes on the official America's Cup website, they list the teams, and there are five teams listed: Emirates Team New Zealand, Lunarosa Prada Pirelli, American Magic, Ineos Team UK, and Stars and Stripes Team USA. Now, we do know this isn't like the Olympics or the World Cup, and you could have a Kiwi at the helm of an Italian team and such things, but how is it, from what I see, there are two USA teams? How does that work?
Well, Stars and Stripes. I think we're about to file a missing persons report on Stars and Stripes. They have not been seen recently. There's no news on them building their boat, which, if they weren't doing it by now, they're going to have a problem. No comments on whether they have actually paid the entry fee to get into the America's Cup. So Stars and Stripes is in a bit of a problem right now. So American Magic really is the American syndicate. But you bring up a good point, Rick, and this came up in San Francisco too, where people would go down to the docks to see the American team and would see a bunch of Aussies and Italians and New Zealanders. And you're right, it's unlike the Olympics. And sometimes people have a problem with that. They're like, why should I root for the American boat when there's no Americans on the boat or almost no Americans on the boat? And, you know, sailing being the international sport that it is, and this being at the very high, high end of the sport itself, you see basically the top sailors in the world. And to get a full America's Cup team together, which, by the way, once you add in shore support and other team members, you're looking at over 100 people per team. You wind up with a lot of Auslanders. But I always kind of compare it to baseball. You know, we love Panda. We don't care that.
You know, Christopher, I understand that the set of rules for the upcoming America's Cup 36 is that every team has to be comprised of members of their own nation. So if you look at the American Magic team, they're all American. So that's a change from the previous rules. So I wonder how that's going to play out.
It'll be interesting. And look, the nationality rules, like the Olympic nationality rules, are really not about are you born and raised in that country, but how long have you resided in the country? So that can be played as well. This American Magic team, I think, is the most American team we've seen since the Dennis Conner days. And I think part of the reason for that is they culled it from a very good existing team called Quantum Racing. And so there was almost a pre-team that had been racing for years before this came over. Terry Hutchins comes from the Quantum campaigns. So there was a boat filled with Americans that they were able to sort of start with to build out the crew for American Magic. But this is a seriously American. But let's be honest, you know, the nationality roles you can play with just as much as you can in the Olympics.
How is it for you, Christopher, when, I mean, obviously in a team sport and we see the American flag, we're drawn to that. But for me in the Olympics, when it comes to individual sports, like maybe figure skating or tennis, whatever it is, I do find that if there's an athlete who I like, I could find myself rooting against the Americans. So for you as a sailing fan, are you like USA all the way? Or are you more open-minded to, hey, I really like what this team is doing, and I think I'm going to support them?
I am mostly USA all the way. I will admit, in '83, I found myself rooting for the Australians, and part of the reason is, of course, coming up in San Francisco, we all were followers of a sailor named Tom Blackaller, and Tom Blackaller's archenemy was Dennis Conner, so. When it got to the finals the first time, you know, the Cup left the United States in '83, I have to admit, towards the end there, I was rooting for the Australians.
Why? Now, I've got to ask, why?
Part of the reason is Dennis Conner, who just, you know, because I grew up in San Francisco racing on the Bay, I was genetically predisposed to not liking Dennis Conner. Mind you, I've never met the man before in my life, so I have no reason to not like him. But also as someone who's watched sailing, been part of sailing, you start realizing, you know, what is it going to mean for the America's Cup if Australia actually wins? How is that going to open it up? How is that going to create? And the other thing, too, was, you know, we had our own jealous reason in San Francisco why we wanted the Australians to win, which is, as we mentioned on the previous show, defenders and challengers. If the New York Yacht Club continued to hold the America's Cup, the defending syndicate would continue to be the New York Yacht Club. But if it went away to Australia, anyone could challenge. And sure enough, in '87, there was a challenger from San Francisco. So
It was also the long con to get the cup here. We were off a little bit there, but we got it finally.
And we just have about 30 seconds before the break. We'll come back with more, Christopher. I always wanted to ask you this. I've been to Caen in Normandy, of course, an important city during World War II. Have you made a visit to your namesake city?
I have, but that's actually not the family city. So there's two sort of branches of Caen in France. One is from there, and the other is from the town of Metz in Alsace-Lorraine. And that's actually where we're from. So it's my namesake, but it's not the ancestral home.
There it is. We'll get more into ancestral homes and such things. This segment not brought to you by any sort of ancestry website. But
yet,
as always, you can call us up and get to us at the Piano Finders call in line at 800-878-PLAY. Karen Lyall, Christopher Kane, and Rick Tittle. Come on back with more SalesportTalk.com.
This is Karen Lyall of Salesport Talk. With the pandemic shutting down movie theaters around the world, Paris and the River Seine will be the host of, guess what? A floating movie theater. Yes, with 30 boats at socially distant spacing from each other, where everyone watches a movie from their own boat. Go to SalesportTalk.com and grab the QRC code or link to download the photo. You've got to see this. I think Paris has given us a challenge that the California Delta and the other inland water bodies in the U.S. and Canada should take up. We love our movies and we love boats. Paris has set the trend, and yes, they have more than a century of trend-setting history behind them. But I bet those of us who sail can arrange to do a cruise in on our own boats and even set up an outdoor water movie theater near us. It might be a fun destination, no matter where you are in the world or whatever kind of boat you have. If you love movies and boating, send us your stories of how you combine the two. Click on the link or scan the QRC code at SalesportTalk.com. Look at the photo and tell us what you think.
Driving through the San Francisco Bay and Tri-City area, All Bay Collision is a one-stop shop including full detail wash and steam clean of engines, auto restoration, and auto body repair for cars, SUVs, buses, ambulances, box trucks, big rigs, fleet accounts, and fiberglass repair. Tow available. With over 60 years of experience, you are in good hands. Visit allbaycollision.com or call 510-489-1313 or 510-825-4727.
All Bay Collision. Over 60 years of experience in auto restoration and body repair for autos, buses, fleet accounts, and more. For the San Francisco Bay and Tri-City area, call 510-489-1313. 510-489-1313. All Bay Collision is a member of the ITEX Barter community, where your ITEX dollars are welcome. This is Karen Lyall with a shout out to the In Shape Health Clubs in Stockton, California, on Hammer Lane, March Lane, Quail Lakes and West Lane, all of which have reopened. InShape Health Clubs are a member of the ITEX trading community, where your ITEX dollars are welcome. And InShape Health Clubs benefit the American Cancer Society and St. Jude Children's Hospital. This is Salesport Talk, recognizing local businesses around the world that make each city unique. At InShape, we understand that there are many different facets to fitness and that all of them are important to living a healthier, happier life. In building stronger biceps, you're also building greater confidence. We know that in gaining stamina on a cardio bike or treadmill, you're also gaining energy and enthusiasm. Fitness isn't just about improving the way you look, it's about improving your outlook and how you feel about yourself. At InShape Clubs, we have the equipment, classes, programs, people, and perspective to put you on the path to a better place. Check out InShape.com and visit one of our 60 locations in California today.
All right, thank you, Rick Tittle, back with you on Sports Byline USA around the world on American Forces Tuesday. First hour, SalesportTalk.com, co-hosted with Karen Lyall, Christopher Kane in studio. And the lines are open at 1-800-878-PLAY. Let's stay right here in town. Peter in San Francisco, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And first of all, thank you for great content on the America's Cup. Appreciate it.
Thank you. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, so I've been to many of the America's Cup events, starting in Australia, and been to most of the venues. And obviously, the world is intrigued by the new monohull ruling. So really, the question I have is this going to be a popular format for people? Already, there's less teams entered in, and just wondering what people think about whether this is going to be a successful format.
Christopher, why don't you take that question first, and then I'll comment.
Yeah, I still don't understand why they went exactly to this boat. It seemed like an answer without a question. There was purists in the sport who wanted the America's Cup to go back to monohulls and move away from these sort of high performance catamarans, which honestly were more planes than they were boats. So even though I thought they were fabulous, I could understand the argument that this is supposed to be a pinnacle sailing event. But we didn't really go back to a monohull. We went to this weird in-betweener where it's a monohull with foils. They really, at the end of the day, didn't change anything. Instead of it being a catamaran where you have one foil per hull, it's a monohull where you have one hull and two foils. So I don't exactly know what answer that they were solving. And I think to Peter's point, I think if they'd gone back to a pure monohull, you probably would have seen at least two more, if not three more, syndicates involved. And I would not be surprised if they rethink this boat the next go around, regardless of who wins it, whether they successfully defend it or not. I just don't think this is a platform going forward. I think it's, you know, the America's Cup is a technology race just as much as Formula One is, but it's also been one where the technology winds up in normal boats, right? Split rudders and wing keels, and there's a lot of innovation that happened in the America's Cup that wound up on regular boats, and people could go out and say, I'm benefiting from this. I don't see how you get that trickle down with these boats. So I'm not convinced this boat was the right answer. And it seems like they were trying to have it both ways and kind of got neither. And that's why you only see three challengers.
Now, I'm going to voice an opinion here too, which is a little bit different than yours, Christopher. Basically, I like the monohull foiling design. I think it's a fabulous invention, and I'm just really excited to see how it plays out when those boats are racing close to each other. And I'm interested to see how the design affects the way the team performs, because the team is basically maneuvering over that space based upon, you know, about the construction of the boat and how, you know, where all the different stations are in the boat. And I'm interested to see. Peter, I'd be interested to know what you think about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think to Christopher's point, it's you know, innovations is at the heart of the America's Cup, and that's great to see. It's obviously concerning that there's a totally new format that we have to learn. And I'm just personally, I'm actually intrigued to see whether this format will succeed. It does seem to be a bit of a hybrid. I personally, as a spectator, as I'm sure most of us are going to be in these challenging times, as a spectator watching from the sidelines, I think it's I think it's going to be intriguing to see whether, you know, it's going to be appealing to the masses, which is really why I've got into the America's Cup, because I just thought it's going to be opening up to many, many different world competitors around the world, and hopefully it continue.
Any other questions today, Peter?
No, I mean, just I think the obvious one is how do people see? I mean, I think there's one event in December. Do people think there's going to be many people getting out to New Zealand to watch this? And I mean, fortunately, New Zealand is in is a safer place around the world. So I'm just hoping that there's going to be, you know, good access to content of the actual event, and whether it will be accessible for everyone.
Thank you very much for your call, Peter. Appreciate it. And the lines are available at 1-800-878-7529. That is a good question. Christopher, I have one for you. I saw an article about the INEOS Team UK. They have their lead systems engineer, a guy named Andy the Animal McLean, who is a veteran of many America's World Cup. And that leads me to this. When I hear lead systems engineer, that sounds like something on the International Space Station. So how much of this is technology, and how much of this is just straight old sailing by the seat of your pants?
I think what tends to happen with these new classes, so we saw this with the America's Cup in San Francisco, and I think we'll see the same dynamic happen here, which is when you're racing these types of boats, you do get these printouts, these charts that say that this boat in this wind sails the best at this angle. And what happens with these new boats is the sailors do kind of look to the systems to tell them the best way to run the boat. But one of the things that made the American boat so much faster in the second half of the AC-34 in San Francisco was the sailors used that as a baseline. And as they got more comfortable with the boat, they actually started going away from what they call polars and just kind of feeling the boat and feeling what was making the boat get faster. As they got more comfortable with it, they actually started moving away from the numbers and, to your point, sailing it more seat of the pants. The Americans found out that if you sailed their boat lower and faster, you actually could get up the course faster. In most, you know, sailing races, you want your boat as efficiently heading towards that next turning mark. And the Americans discovered that if they go lower, they went so much faster that even though they had to cover more ground, they were covering it so much quicker that it wasn't a problem. And that wasn't initially on the polars. That was more the sailors going, hey, there's more speed in this boat. We're not doing it right. I think you're going to see that again with this new class, because to Peter's point, here we go again back at day one with a new class. I think you're going to see them originally kind of look to the data to try and understand how to sail the boat. But as they get more comfortable with them and they start seeing how the boats interact with each other on the course, then that native seat of the pants – there's certain sailors, and Jimmy Spithill's one of those, who they just step onto a boat and they make it faster. There's just something about how they feel a boat that just makes them faster. And I think you'll see that come to the fore as these sailors get more and more used to these new boats.
I wonder if teams in the future are going to have a bionic chip to help feed them the data, you know, that's coming from the performance, because basically right now what they're relying on is their, you know, their technical people and so forth to tell them how the other competitors performing, how their boat's performing and all the wind, plus their sailing experience. But how much faster would that be if they had that just, you know, wired into their brain?
But still,
I wonder if that would make a difference.
But still, at the end of the day, you still got to be able to race the other guy. And that's why I thought the video we put up on sailsporttalk.com was so fascinating, because you could see two very fast boats, you know, tuned with an inch of their lives, but it was human error that decided that race at the end of the day. It was a sailor making the right call and another sailor making the wrong call, and the technology had nothing to do with it.
You know, it's interesting about the pride New Zealand has in this event. When you're a small country, I remember being in Denmark for a family reunion. My grandfather was from Denmark. This was in 96, and they just were over the moon that they won the team handball gold at the Atlanta Olympics, something that most Americans probably had no idea, but the country was just celebrating. So with New Zealand, 3 years on now from Bermuda, can you just talk about the national pride of every Kiwi they have in this event?
Yeah, I mean, there's only two sports in New Zealand, rugby and sailing. And, you know, it's amazing to watch them get behind it. Also, as we pointed out in the last show, they're so behind it as a national sport that it's the only syndicate that's actually partially funded by the government. That's how important the America's Cup is to them. And, you know, much like England, you know, being an island nation, sailing is in their blood, because it was part of the survival of their nation growing up. And they are incredibly excited. It is, you know, one of the Super Bowls, you know, when it's either the America's Cup or the All Blacks rugby team that have the focus of the country. And, you know, that was one of the fun things about having the cup in San Francisco was watching, you know, these Kiwis flood to San Francisco for the finals and just so incredibly excited about, you know, coming to San Francisco and being on the water and being able to actually see with their own two eyes this race that they had been backing probably most of their adult lives, but they never been able to see it because the America's Cup up to that point had always been out in the ocean. So the idea that a Kiwi could come to San Francisco and actually see their nation's boat fly right past them, you know, a couple hundred feet off the pier, it was great to see them.
Well, American Magic Team is now already in New Zealand, ready for, you know, the training and getting used to the waters and so forth. And it's not like it's the first time they've been there. But we don't get to see that firsthand here, but we do get to experience some little peaks and snippets as the team lets out their secrets to let us know. But how are these teams going to race without the traditional buildup and the being able to compete each other along the way? Because COVID's really changed things.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen it with CLGP, Larry Ellison's, you know, sailing sort of Grand Prix, I guess is the best way to call it, which had to shut down. You know, and a lot of these sailors would be bouncing in and out. A lot of these sailors would have gone to the Olympics this summer and competed there, and they couldn't do that. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, sort of this effect that COVID has had on the windup and people's skills. And it's tough. You have sailors who, you know, were ready to bounce the Olympics and go race the Olympics for their country and then come back to the Cup, and they couldn't do that. So I think there's going to be a lot of pent-up desire and a lot of pent-up interest. I mean, I think you saw that when the Premier League kicked back off in England. I mean, their ratings were through the roof because people were like, thank God we're finally watching football again. And I think you're going to see a pretty hard push up, especially since there was no Olympics. Once the Cup starts racing, I think they're going to get a lot of attention.
That's Christopher Kane in our studios in San Francisco, one of our friends and sailing aficionados. And Christopher, thanks for joining us once again. We appreciate it.
Of course.
And Karen Lyle, SailSportTalk.com, that's the website. Anything else you want to throw at them one more time, where to go for all the pictures and videos and stuff?
Yes. Yeah, so what we've done is we've put a QRC code up on the homepage, SailSportTalk.com. And if you either click on the read more and get the link or do the QRC, that's going to take you to a photo album of pictures that Christopher Kane took at the America's Cup in San Francisco, which is one of the reasons he knows so much about this, is because he was on the boats actually taking pictures for the New York Times and Huffington Post. But also we added the video that we talked about in this episode there, and so you can click on that and watch that 17th and 18th race.
Watch that first pre-start. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. All right. Very good. Christopher Kane, Karen Lyle, thank you both so much. I'm Rick Tittle. We will take a quick break and come on back on Sports Byline USA.